The Guardian.
The Guardian has partnered with audible.co.uk to offer listeners a free audiobook when you sign up for a one-month, no-commitment trial of the Audible service. Audible has over 50,000 audiobook titles available to download. Go to guardian.co.uk/audible for further details.
Hello, this is Politics Weekly. I'm Tom Clark. This Sunday, it's crunch time for Greece and maybe for the Eurozone as a whole as the stricken nation heads to the polls once again. In their most important election since the Civil War, the Greek people are currently remarkably evenly split between the conservative New Democracy, who are sworn to do whatever it takes to remain in the single currency, and the radical left coalition Syriza, who insists that euro austerity is strangling their economy. So, will Greece leave the single currency club? Or will they be pushed? And what are the consequences for the rest of us? Joining me in our pod are The Guardian's economics editor, Larry Elliott, its diplomatic editor, Julian Borgia, and down the line from Athens, our woman on the ground, Helena Smith. A warm welcome to you all. It was the world's first democracy, and with the old order trembling, it's heading back to the ballot box for the second time in a matter of weeks. Last month, the conservative New Democracy eked out a hollow victory on a miserable 19% of the ballot. Hot on their heels, however, were the radical leftists. Syriza, their defining mission, is calling time on austerity, so they've refused to reach out across the aisle to any of the establishment parties. And in a splintered parliament, that made government impossible, which is why we are now heading into fresh elections. Now, Helena, you're there on the ground. There are no more polls. It's illegal to publish them. But it does seem to be a close contest between anger and fear. In your gut, who do you think is coming out on top?
I think I would probably roll the die in favour of New Democracy 2 days ahead of this poll. As you say, surveys, public opinion surveys, are prohibited, or at least the public release of them is banned. But polling stations do conduct private polls for all of the parties, and it would seem that New Democracy is emerging very slightly ahead of the radical far-left Syriza at this very late stage. But I should add that the contest last time round in early May was very much played out in the last 48 hours. In the last 48 hours, Syriza, led by the young and charismatic Alexis Tsipras, picked up the vast majority of its votes, not least among the under 50-year-olds in large urban areas such as Athens.
And so, Helena, just tell us a bit more about this alliance, which until recently the rest of the world hadn't heard much about, Syriza and its young leader, Alexis Tsipras.
Well, the world hadn't heard much about Syriza because Syriza, for many years, was the fifth largest party in the Greek parliament. At the elections of 2009, it garnered a mere 4.6% of the vote. So it was an unknown factor, barely known beyond the borders of Greece. It is an eclectic alliance of 12 factions ranging from traditional Marxists to ex-Euro-communists, champagne socialists, Greens, ex-Trotskyists, Maoists. It really is a rather colourful group that has never really had to grapple with power. But on the back of this extraordinary discontent and disaffection and anger with these hard-hitting austerity measures demanded of Greece in return for the financial assistance now propping up its economy, Syriza has gained enormously in its popularity, emerging as the surprise runner-up in the poll last May.
So that's where Syriza's come from, but where's it going? Is it gets closer to power? Is it changing?
There are certainly signs that Syriza is changing, that it's moderating its tone, it's backpedaling, it's desperately trying to reassure Europeans that its desire is to stay within the 17-nation eurozone, that it does not want to take Greece out of the bloc. And there is a school of thought here in Athens that it would be a very good thing if Syriza did win this election, because the figures are terrifying. Once in power, it would be disarmed of its populism that has basically catapulted it to the position in which it is now.
Thanks very much to Helena in Athens there. Now, Julian, we've got the picture then, the lowdown on the streets of Athens, but there's implications right across the continent, as we keep hearing. Whoever wins this election, however... as our diplomatic editor, you must have something to say about their negotiating hand. It can only have been strengthened by the fact that Spain seems to have just been given a bailout, or whatever it's called, a rebranded bailout, on different terms.
Yes, I mean, the Spanish claim that they are a different case, that they'd carried out their austerity measures already as far as the public sector were concerned, and Larry would be able to explain those differences and how real they are in much greater depth. It's not clear whether Greece are going to be offered the same kind of deal as Spain, or whether their potential exit from the eurozone has already been discounted by the European Union and by the banks.
And do you think the rest of Europe might be inclined to go easy on them? There's fears of contagion and so on. Whoever wins, or do you think it really will make a difference who wins, in terms of what the attitude that Northern Europe will take will be?
Well, I think what will make a difference is whether the coalition that comes out of it has a plan for restructuring, reforming the Greek public sector. Neither of the two big parties up to now, PASOK and New Democracy, has taken the opportunity to really reform the public sector and civil service and the whole dysfunctional system of tax collection in the country. So it will presumably make a difference when they go to the negotiating table whether they have something to offer from their side. Now, whether even if they did have their own plan, or they'd get any change luck out of Angela Merkel and the rest of the eurozone is, you know, at the moment looks unlikely.
And Larry, I mean, we look at the statistics that are so dreadful, they're quite hard to take in. You know, it's a fifth has disappeared off output, a quarter off pensions, and half of young people without jobs. Is it a sort of death spiral from which nothing can happen, or do you think a different government in Greece now could still make a difference?
I don't think anything is going to change in Greece anytime soon, no matter who wins the election at the weekend. I think that the new Greek government has got three things going for it, really. One is it's quite clear that austerity is driving the economy deeper into the mire, and the debt problem is not getting any better because the GDP is going down. Therefore, the debt-to-GDP ratio is not improving, even though they are trying to cut spending and increase taxes. That's the first thing. I mean, the second thing is that it's the classic problem of if you owe the bank £1,000, you've got a problem. If you owe the bank £1 million, the bank's got a problem.
Right.
The Greeks think that that their problem is Europe's problem, and that the idea that there could be some sort of smooth Greek exit, and that the rest of Europe could throw Greece out of the eurozone without there being massive contagion is for the birds, and I agree with them. I don't think that there would be anything like the sort of smooth departure that some of the Europeans think there would be. And the final thing is that what's happening in the rest of Europe does actually make it really important for European policymakers to stop this crisis and stop it pretty quickly. I mean, you mentioned that Spanish bond yields have gone up. They've gone through 7% today. You know, the respite that Europe got from that 100 billion euros for the Spanish banking system disappeared really in a morning. And it's back in crisis within 48 hours.
Can I just a slightly technical thing I'm not clear on that I want to check is everyone said a few weeks ago exactly that you know, putting money into Spanish banks was the urgent priority because you could now see the mechanism of contagion, which is that, you know, Greece would leave or whatever, and suddenly there'd be seven Northern Rocks at once going on in the streets of Madrid. Put that money in. What's the link here? Why is it Spanish government debt suddenly more expensive? And what happens next if Greece does leave the euro?
Well, there's a vicious circle going on in Greece, which is that there's a sort of link between the Spanish banks and the Spanish government. So Spanish, the bailout, the 100 billion euros, goes on to the Spanish sovereign debt. It increases its debt to GDP ratio. The only people that are really buying Spanish government debt are the Spanish banks.
Right.
So there's a circular problem. So the increase in Spain's debt is increasing the debt servicing needs of the Spanish government. And the only people who are really willing to buy Spanish bonds are the Spanish banks, which themselves required the bailout in the first place. So so the feeling is that even 100 billion euros is not going to be enough in these new desperate circumstances that Spain finds itself in. And while it looked to be a very clever way of finessing the problem at the weekend, it looks a bit half-baked and a bit half-hearted by the end of the week. And I think that inevitably, if Spanish bond yields stay above 7%, they are looking at the IMF support here, with or without the normal conditionality. I think the IMF would be crackers to impose the normal structural adjustment programme on Spain, both because they've already got a quite harsh structural adjustment programme anyway, and partly because this is a time really when you need the velvet glove rather than the iron fist. You need to give Spain some help to get its economy moving again, rather than impose conditions which are going to make it more difficult for the country to grow. Because if you kill off growth, you're going to increase Spanish government debt, you're going to increase interest rates on that debt, and you're going to make problems even worse for the Spanish banking system. So you've got to break into that vicious circle somewhere. And it, you know, the fact is, this is now a desperately serious crisis. Spain is the Eurozone's fourth biggest economy. It's a different order of magnitude to Greece, Ireland and Portugal, which are, you know, they're all obviously important countries, and the pain there is very important. But it's you know, you're talking about a very, very big country here, and the stakes are therefore much, much higher.
And a country, Julian, that was a bit of a poster boy for the Washington institutions, wasn't it, until relatively recently. It didn't have what Greece has had, a very, you know, big profligate government debt. And as you were saying before, a sort of tendency to enjoy spending money more than raising it.
Yeah, and like Greece, also a country where the democratic institutions in their latest incarnation are relatively young. You know, they're both had dictatorships into the 70s. And the question is, how strong are those democratic institutions? I have a feeling that is what is going to be tested now. They were tested first in Greece, where you're already seeing the emergence of neo-Nazis, mass demonstrations. Now, if there's no golden way out from these elections, which there doesn't seem to be, there is no solution that can be proffered by any combination of the Greek parties, and you see not just social collapse, you see the pensions not being paid, you're seeing just general political and social meltdown. That may be a very frightening signal to the rest of Europe about what happens in these societies that don't have incredibly strong political civil institutions when they're in under that amount of stress.
God, it's frightening, isn't it, how quickly it goes from something about bond markets, Larry, to something about, you know, whether ballot boxes are going to still be functioning in a few years' time.
I think that Julian's point is absolutely right. I mean, there is a moment when countries population just buckle under the strain of austerity, and I think they've reached that point in Greece, and they may well be reaching it in Spain fairly soon. I mean, you've already seen sort of general strikes and mass demonstrations in the streets of Madrid and other Spanish cities. So it does seem to me like a crunch time for the Eurozone.
And do you think, just specifically on the Greek election. We've heard it's likely to be a close-fought thing, but then there is this winner's bonus for 50 yeah. extra seats, whoever just edges it. Do you think it makes, you said it won't make much odds to the economy, but will it make much odds to the reaction of the rest of Europe who comes out on top on Sunday?
Well, I think it'll be slightly easier for Europe to come to terms with PASOK, a new democracy coalition, if that's what transpires, then it will be to deal with Syriza. But I think actually Syriza would probably have a sort of slightly more moderate tone if it formed the government than it's had in opposition, because it would need to start having meaningful diplomatic talks with essentially Greece's creditors in the rest of Europe. So I think that probably Tsipras's his rhetoric would probably become slightly less harsh.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think in some ways the best result for Syriza would be if the New Democracy PASOK coalition does form a government, because if they do and stick to the austerity program, then Greece's problems are going to intensify over the coming months, and any respite that they get as a result of sticking to the plan is going to be short-lived unless Europe comes up with a radically different way of approaching the Greek problem. Essentially what Greece and all the other countries need is more time. What they need to do is get growth going. They need to get their economies back on their feet. They need to get them working again, get unemployment coming down, and then they need to start tackling their deficits and tackling their national debt. What they're really doing here, and this has been a problem all the way through really, is putting the cart before the horse, and they've got themselves in a position where they're cutting public spending and they're killing growth, and that's leading to higher deficits and higher debt. So they've got to the key is to break into that cycle, and I'm as far as I can see, there's no real plan for that to happen.
I mean, if I read you right, you think really from Greece's point of view it should leave the euro because there's no feasible way out, whereas for the rest of Europe that would be a disaster, and so the Europe needs to
a lot of talk about Greece doing what Argentina did in 2002, when Argentina in the 1990s was quite similar to Greece in that it had a currency peg with the US dollar and had a very, very deep recession in the late 1990s as a result. They had lots of governments, quite unstable politically, just as Greece is. And in the end, it decided to break the dollar peg. It yeah. devalued the peso. It repudiated. It defaulted on most of its debts. And it had a gigantic recession in 2002, but that was followed by a relatively brisk and good five-year boom subsequently. And there are people who say Greece might be better off having 1 year of intense pain rather than a permanent period of austerity, of death by a thousand cuts. I mean, the difficulty is that Greece is not Argentina. Argentina had lots of things the global economy wanted in the 2000s. Had lots of commodities, lots of agricultural products that were, were snapped up by China and other countries, and the US. Greece has got tourism and shipping and not much else. So it's not a completely parallel situation. But I mean, I think the deeper the crisis gets, the more it's likely that Greece at some point will say, how much worse can it be on the outside than it is on the inside? But you're right, for the rest of Europe, I just don't buy the argument that this is going to be, that Europe is prepared for this, it's got its bailout fund in place, that it's had time to get all its banks straightened out and get them recapitalised. I think all that is just moonshine. I think that if Greece were to leave the euro, it would be like Lehman Brothers all over again, except much, much worse, because instantly, we know what happens in bond markets, instantly the pressure would be on the next weakest link, and then the weakest link after that. So, the idea that the bond markets would say, oh, look, Greece has left the euro, everything is put in place to stop a contagion. We're now going to take our bat and ball away and we're going to stop speculating against these currencies. That's just for the birds. It's just not going to happen.
What I found also being in Greece recently is that from the point of view of Greek public opinion, they can't imagine it getting that much worse. So their fear of leaving the euro and going back to the drachma is not that strong. There are a lot of people saying, well, how much worse can it get? I think it probably could get much worse in terms of capital flight and people losing a lot in terms of their savings when the strange round came. But it means that it's going to be hard, I think, to intimidate Greece into going along with austerity on pain of being chucked out if it's lost that fear.
Let's just talk for a second about what the response in the rest of Europe would be. We've had articles in recent weeks from, I don't know, Lord Owen, former Foreign Secretary and SDP founder, talking about, a recast Europe where you have an inner European Union and a wider European community. You've got different ideas about banking insurance being put forward by the President of the European Commission. And then you've got rumours that Germany's kind of getting ready for something big. But the problem is that all these things require treaty changes and often referendums that a grumpy public might not be inclined to support right now, would you say?
Well, if the long-term solution is a closer fiscal union, yes, that is going to be difficult. It's going to be difficult with all the members. I don't know whether that applies to a bailout, which ultimately seems to be in the hands of Angela Merkel, and whether she is prepared to bend on this. I don't know what Larry thinks, whether that is a realistic proposition.
Well, I think my sense of the Germans is that they've been very hard line. I mean, I spoke to a senior German banker a couple of weeks ago whose view of this was, if your friend comes round and they've spent all their money and they're deeply in debt and asked to use your credit card, you're pretty careful about giving him your PIN number. I mean, that was their view. And so, I mean, my sense is that the Germans, if they're going to go for fiscal union, I don't think the Germans really want to be the people who bust up the euro. I mean, I think that's one issue. On the other hand, they're not prepared to just write blank checks for everybody. So what they really want, I think, and this is desperately dangerous, I think, actually, what it requires is the crisis to reach such a point that everybody else agrees to the German terms, that they agree to the strings attached vision of Europe, which the Germans are talking about. So if they have a banking union, the Germans will have the right to go into countries and tell them how to run their fiscal policy. I mean, essentially, and this is going to be the difficulty when it comes to getting this through parliaments, national parliaments, if they give up their right to raise taxes and set spending, are essentially like county councils in Britain. You know, they will have very little autonomy. And whether the people of Europe are prepared to go for that extreme solution, I think is not obvious to me. And I think that, I don't think the Germans are prepared to play on any other terms other than if they're going to bankroll Europe, then they're going to write the rule book.
Let's just turn finally to the implications for British politics. Today we've got David Cameron giving evidence at the Leveson inquiry, which kind of at the moment feels like the big political issue in the Westminster Village. But in the end, the fallout from the euro crisis is likely to be the bigger deal for both him and George Osborne, Larry.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's in one sense, it's helpful. In one minor sense, it's helpful to the government because it gives them somebody to blame. I mean, the first year that they were in power, they were able to blame Gordon Brown and Ned Balls for all the problems that they were facing. And now they've got another whipping boy, which is the Eurozone crisis. So all the problems of the UK economy can be heaped at the door of Brussels, which is also completely untrue. I mean, a lot of the problems of the UK economy are UK specific, and they predated the intensification of the euro crisis. But it is convenient politically for the government to have Europe to blame for it, for the fact that the economy is in a double dip recession already and is probably going to go deeper into one. But I mean, the bigger point is that if you're trying to rebalance the economy, it's pretty hard when the market, which takes 50% of your goods, is having an existential crisis. And what's happened as a result of the euro crisis is that the government is at least 2 years off track in its political and economic programme. What it really wanted to do was have 2 years of pain early on in the parliament, realign the political and economic cycles, and have the economy growing briskly before the election in 2015. And that's not happening,
and
clearly.
There could be cracks in the coalition too, Julian, if European Union treaty changes or, if it requires Britain to sign on the dotted line for something, there'll be lots of people on the Conservative side who'll be saying, oh, use this chance to bring back autonomy over fishing quotas or whatever it is.
Yeah, I think Europe is one of the things, maybe alongside military action in Iran, that would definitely cut this coalition into, and it will have obviously political effects far beyond. I think it's quite likely that it might be the death of the Obama administration as well, who was looking for a bit of growth and looking for a bit of growth out of Europe to help him through until November, and it's not coming.
Well, so that we don't depress ourselves too much, perhaps we ought to leave that there. As we briefly alluded to, there is another big political event going on today with the Prime Minister appearing at the Leveson inquiry. There will be a separate media talk podcast dedicated to that once he's sat down. So look out for that on guardian.co.uk. In the meantime, my thanks to Larry Elliott, to Julian Borgia and to Helena Smith. The producer was Simon Barnard. I'm Tom Clark, and thanks very much for listening.
The Guardian has partnered with audible.co.uk to offer listeners a free audiobook when you sign up for a 1 month, no commitment trial of the Audible service. Audible has over 50,000 audiobook titles available to download. Go to guardian.co.uk/audible for further details.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.